Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, it's a real privilege to welcome back to the Salyer Report Junius Ricardo Stanton. He is the producer and host of the Digital Underground and the Cyber Sanctuary. He's a writer and very longtime experienced community broadcaster. You can keep up with him regularly. He blogs at From the Ramparts, and we have several great interviews with him in the Salyer Report archives. I've had numerous requests from subscribers over the years to discuss Edward Bernays, known as the Father of Propaganda. And so recently I realized that Junius was blogging on Bernays and his techniques, and I got very excited and asked him if he would come on and do a Salyer Report on this topic, because if I had to use one word to describe Junius, it would be astute. And the thing that makes him perfect to address the issue of Bernays and translate that into some of the lies we're grappling with today is Junius always comes at things from a very human, pro-human standpoint, but he manages to always keep his cool. And when you talk about lies this big or this harmful, it's hard to keep your cool, and he always manages to do it. So, Junius, it's always a pleasure to have you on the Salyer Report. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation, and it has been a while.
Yeah, it's too long, too long. So tell us about Edward Bernays. Tell us about who he was, what he did, and why you find Bernays fascinating and important for us to understand.
Well, first of all, most people have no idea who Edward Bernays was. He was born in Vienna, Austria, Hungary. He was the nephew of Sigmund Freud, the double nephew of Sigmund Freud. His mother's brother was Sigmund Freud. His father's sister married Sigmund Freud, so he has that real tight connection, and he was a real proponent and a cheerleader for his uncle, particularly when he moved, when the family moved from Austria to New York. He was born and raised in New York. He's of Jewish religious and cultural extraction, and according to some of his biographers, his grandfather was a very influential rabbi. And so I'm sure he attended the Hebrew schools in New York, but he was also an attendee of the public school system. And he graduated from Cornell, and he majored in agriculture because his father was associated with agriculture. But he soon abandoned that and took up journalism. And he began doing stories, and then he got hooked up with the war movement, and he joined the Committee on Public Information, which was a propaganda arm of the United States government to promote World War I. And his area of where he targeted his influence was basically South America. There he met Walter Lippmann. They worked on that committee together, and he was one of Bernays' influential peers. Now, most people remember Walter Lippmann as a newspaper writer, but he was also a propagandist in his own right. And he had a very, I would say, elitist view of what he was doing, and he took a very dim view of the American population, the masses. And I think to some degree he influenced Bernays. And Bernays worked there, and he was successful, and he left there, and he began to branch out on his own. He became a press agent for theatrical performers. And I guess his experiences in the Committee on Public Information made him think that he could use those same techniques in the promotion of his clients. And what he did, he used some of his uncle's theories on the unconscious, and he was introduced to the writings of Gustave Le Bon, who was a Frenchman, and Wilfred Trotter, who was an Englishman, and they had theories on crowd psychology and crowd control and population manipulation. So he very astutely took his uncle's ideas about the subconscious and melded them with the ideas of Le Bon and Trotter and started to come up with his own theories on how to manipulate the public. And he loved the idea that he was a manipulator, and he tooted his own horn. He was very proud of the fact that he had this skill, because at the time he was a pioneer. And so he started working, and he was successful bringing himself to the attention of some major clients. And he worked with, according to one source, he worked with a psychoanalyst, A.A. Brill, to work on one of his projects. And he worked for, in the beginning, he worked for Liggett and Myers. They were one of his clients. And so he was promoting cigarettes, smoking. And when they looked at the data, they saw that very few women smoked in public. And so he left Liggett and Myers and went to work for the American Tobacco Company. He took the same approach, but what he wanted to do was to change the marketing demographic and get women to come out and smoke in public. So he created these publicity stunts. He worked with the media of his time. He sent out press releases, and he used, manipulated the press to cover some of his stories. And so what you'll see is that he was one of the first persons to use publicity stunts, to use programmed and contrived events to make people think that they were real, when in fact they were staged, and he got coverage for it. And the coverage was not just local, was national, in some cases international. And so he became very successful. He had a client list like Procter & Gamble, the American Tobacco Company, Cartier, CBS, United Fruit. And that's important because in later years, he was a major player in the United Fruit in Guatemala. He also had General Electric. He had politicians like Calvin Coolidge. He was brought in to try to soften and make Coolidge look more like a regular guy, because he was supposed to be so stiff. And then, according to some documents that I've read, that Herbert Hoover called him in when he was panicking and in the latter stages of the election in 32, but he wasn't able to turn the tide. And he worked for a lot of nonprofits. One example was he worked for the NAACP in 1920.
Really?
Yeah. He was one of their clients.
I had no idea. Right.
And what he did was, as you know, 1920, you have the post-World War, Red Summer, the vengeance, the violence. And so one of his techniques was to show the contributions that black folks had made toward white America, to try to soften the negativity and the animus that was being directed at black people at that time. And so he, you know, built his career during the intervening war years, and he became popular. And he wrote books. I think his first book was called Crystallizing Public Opinion. I think he's most known for his book on propaganda. I think that was the second book. And interestingly enough, in the 20s, Joseph Goebbels became familiar with the book. And he used a lot of the techniques that Bernays pioneered and talked about in his books to build a movement with the National Socialist Party, which were the Nazis. And he did that despite the fact that Bernays was Jewish, and despite the fact that the Nazis had, their race supremacy, and they looked down upon the Jewish folks. So Bernays even acknowledged the fact, he wasn't that proud of it, but he acknowledged the fact that Goebbels and Hitler used his techniques, as did a lot of people, and as do most people today, unbeknownst to the vast majority of probably even PR people, advertising people, political strategists. A lot of them don't really know that they're using Bernays' technique.
You had a great quote from Goebbels up on your commentary on Bernays, and I just wanted to read it because it's a perfect example of one of his techniques. Unless you've got it there, do you have it there? You can read it.
Big lie.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I don't have it up.
If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. The lie can be maintained only for such time as the state can shield the people from the political, economic, or military consequences of the lie. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all of its powers to repress dissent, for the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie, and thus, by extension, the truth is the greatest enemy of the state.
Yes, and that's what we're experiencing in real time now, and
Right.
that's what we now. And it seems like it was true then in Nazi Germany, but it's like truth on steroids here in the United States today.
Right, I keep referring to us as a Hotel Auschwitz. And that's actually that's John Rappaport's expression, but I use it all the time. One of the things I think Bernays established in the world of public relations and propaganda was basically that the impopulation was incapable of dealing with the truth, and it was moral and right for elites to use these techniques to manage the general population.
Yeah, I think he had, that was his idea, but he also shared with that idea with Walter Lippmann.
Right.
And in fact, I think Bernays' cachet was that he believed that, and he believed that he was part of what he called the invisible government or the invisible hand. And
Right.
he relished his position and the respect that people gave him. Because it's interesting, he lived to be 103 years old. And he was active. Remember, he was born in 1891. He was active up until really still had some influence in the mid 1900s, in the 1950s, and early 1960s.
Well, you know, it's interesting. He spent a lot of time trying to talk his wife out of smoking.
Right,
So while
right.
he was busy promoting getting women to smoke publicly, he was trying to get his wife to stop.
They said that while he was doing that, he would, she, I forgot the brand she smoked, but he would go throughout the house and take the cigarettes, break them in half, and put them in the toilet. I mean, he was that approach to his smoking, yet he was the forerunner of getting women to smoke in public. Now, they smoked already, but it was
Right.
considered ladylike to smoke in public. So
Right.
his were to get females photographed in public smoking, and one way he did it was he had some women march in a parade, and they were all smoking out in
Right.
public. So, and these were supposed to be in the vanguard of women's lib back then.
Okay, well, one of the things I asked you to do was to come up with the 10 biggest lies of the 21st century. And what I proposed is that you come up with five, I come up with five. We have two runner-ups just in case there's crossover, and we just go through them, you know, you one, then me one, etc., and see if we can really create a picture of the big lies we're struggling today and show you how they really evolved out of this system over the last 100 years. This has been, you know, many, many years evolving and building, you know, what we're struggling with today.
Yeah, I agree. And we're still seeing the impact of Bernays. I just want to give you a classic example that we don't consider. He created the current, if I ask you, what is the media image of a female, American female, projected today? What would you say? You know, physical type today.
I have no idea.
All right, well, today, most of them are thin. And so that was his criterion when he started photographing women, and we had them in his what I call his publicity stunts and his planned events. They were all thin. And he did that initially for his cigarette promotions, because one of the things that they said was that cigarettes help you lose weight. They said cigarettes were soothing. And so he used thin women in his promotions and campaigns and ads.
Uh-huh.
And so today, that anorexic look that's so popular in America, particularly with models and fashion and ads, he started that.
And what else is there about the female prototype? What else?
I think that he was one of the first to link with the feminist movement, although it wasn't called that necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so, again, he linked with his going back to his respect for his uncle. He got a psychoanalyst to look at women and suggest what some of their desires, their wants, and their images were, and he used those in his campaigns to tap women on a subconscious level. And that's the key to Bernays. He was using almost subliminal type subliminal messages to get people to do things that they normally wouldn't have done under the circumstances.
Right. If you go back through history, women get used a lot to create new laws. So to create prohibition or to outlaw certain drugs, which are critical to the economics of a variety of different players.
Yeah. And it also gave them a chance, because we tend to think that women were part and parcel of the economic and political system all along, and they weren't. So a lot of times this gave them access and fulfill that need that they had to be participants in the overall culture and society.
Right. Right. It's I don't know if anybody's ever gone back and done a history of how women have been used to help centralization, but it would be a very, I think for many women, it would be a very shocking history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's pull up to the 21st century. Anything else on Bernays' techniques you wanted to underscore before we start?
Well, I just want to show the connection with what he did to what's going on today. Remember, I told you that United Fruit was one of his clients.
Right, right.
And because he was into propaganda and promoting war, he was behind the campaign to get Eisenhower to take action against the people of Guatemala who were picketing or demanding land reform for United Fruit, and he helped pave the way on a psychological operation campaign for the CIA-sponsored coup in 1954.
You know, I don't know if you've ever, one of my favorite documentaries is called Satellite Fever, and it's about how the military-industrial complex turns on the shriek-o-meter on Eisenhower to get him to do a variety of things related to the U.S. space program, because the Russians had put up Sputnik, and it's all about the reaction. And you really see that machinery turn on, and it never occurred to me that it might have been Bernays at work, but it might have been. If he did Guatemala, you know, if it wasn't him, it was certainly the same techniques.
Right. Yeah, but it didn't, you know, it really didn't take much to move Eisenhower. Remember, his brother was the main, the one who already had his foot in the door with the Good Old Boys Network. They brought Ike in because of his popularity.
Right.
So, and, you know, he had keen insights on the, in the military-industrial complex. He just waited till he was leaving office to say anything about it.
Right, and I think it's very important for everybody to understand that it wasn't just Madison Avenue that was picking up these techniques. It was the intelligence agencies and, you know, the different coordinating groups in the shadow government that are really adopting and using them.
Right, and I think that Bernays, like Lippmann, had access and entree to those people.
Right.
His clients just weren't Procter and Gamble. He was working for the government.
Right.
And in fact, in World War II, he worked for the United States Information Agency. He worked for the Army and the Navy. So you're exactly right. He was there, and they used his expertise and technique.
Right, and the CIA got created in 49.
Right.
So that there was still plenty of crossover there.
Right. But even with that, the precursors of the CIA, the OSS, and that same type of mentality was already in operation.
Right. If you look at the Executive Committee on the Council of Foreign Relations, I felt that was one of the places where a lot, you know, some of these propaganda wars were crafted. And that's very much the group that the CIA, you know, OSS and then CIA spun out of. So you're right. There would have been, you know, there would have been tremendous crossover of that New York world, whether it was government or Madison Avenue, during
right.
that period.
Right.
So he would have been really in there for the creation and invention of the CIA and their propaganda techniques.
Mm-hmm. And he would also have been a key person in the academic arena, too.
Right.
I'm sure he had some influence, major influence there.
Right, because, well, if you look at that funding mechanism that they created from the CIA, that was major funding that then started to flow to the universities to fund a lot of the research that expanded the application of these techniques, including mind control. So, you're right. I had not realized Bernays was there that late in time, but that is a very significant overlay. So, wow. Okay. No wonder the lies are so big. Oh, God. Okay, so you go first. 10 biggest lies of the 20th century. And again, we're not presenting them in any particular order. And we're both free to kind of come at this in whatever way we want. So, Junius, you're my guest, so you go first.
Okay. Now, my list is the 21st century. And
right.
what I did was I did it chronologically. So the first one is Enron was a legitimate company that just had bad leadership. You know full well what the full scope of Enron was, even beyond
right.
the fraud and the manipulation that they did with trading for energy and buying and selling energy companies. I mean, they were basically a conduit for fraudulent corporate and political corruption. You know, they took full advantage of the government deregulation of the energy industry, and they were involved with the Wall Street greed and recklessness And I call them the bridge between the savings and loan ripoffs and the mortgage crisis, or
right.
even to some degree, 9/11, which
right.
will, I'm sure, is on the list.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, that goes at the heart of several of what I chose, because I wanted to look at this sort of from a systems approach. And so, well, it hits my number two, but let me start with my number one. My number one was the ability to create a false map of reality and maintain it daily. So we have literally created a system of fake news, fake intelligence, fake science. But I think within that, the biggest piece that, you know, to me is the great lie, the big lie, is when the smart system rolled out, they said that this was a communication system. And I don't think it is. I think it's a surveillance system
mm-hmm.
and a harvesting system.
Hacking
and part
system.
Of that, right, it's been rolled out with serious mind control technology. And so you've created this mapping system that you share with the population, and it's basically getting them to see a false map of the world. So, you know, they think it's the sky, but it's not. It's a ceiling, and the real sky is above it. So you've literally created, you know, a fake universe, and you've got everybody living in a fake universe. And it's so, because of the way the technology and the digital technology works, it's so completely ubiquitous that you have people walking inside of a lie and they don't even know that it's not reality.
Right.
So to
right.
me, the ability to create a communications and information system that is in fact really a surveillance and harvesting system is, to me, one of the biggest lies of the century. And what's interesting is one of the reasons I started to look at how that system worked was the financial frauds, Enron being one of the first ones that sort of blew me up, was you can't pull off financial frauds without having that fake, you know, it's almost like the Truman Show. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Truman Show with Jim Carrey, where he's living in a movie set and he's living in a TV show and he doesn't even know it. He thinks it's reality. So you couldn't pull off these financial frauds without this extraordinary living in a fake reality system and without the mind control technology.
Right. And I think what you talked about, the digital technology now, where it's to the point, remember when we were growing up and we watched a cowboy movie and we'd see them and say, well, that's not real because he shot the six shooter 9 times. So in the back of our watches, oh, well, that's phony. Today,
right.
with the graphics, the imagery, the music, it's very difficult to determine the threshold between reality and fakeness. And so you're
right.
absolutely right. It has become blurred, and so we find ourselves engulfed in this digital fake reality, and people just don't know.
Right. Right, and I think, you know, one of the things I bump into a lot as an investment advisor is the entrainment technology creating bad decision making. So, mm-hmm. you know, gambling addictions, pornography addictions, food addictions, I think is very much driven by that, but also there's all sorts of lousy consumer decisions made influenced by entrainment.
Right.
And investment decisions too. You know, it's used for financial fraud. So, but it's hard for people to grapple with the fact that it exists because then it's going to cause them to question their whole reality.
Right. And the key to mind control is to get the target to believe that the ideation that he's experiencing is his own. You
right.
know, he's not aware or she's not aware that in Brené's case, they were just triggering latent feelings and ideas. Today, they're just embedding, and as you call it, in training, what right. the kind that they want people to actually behave based upon on a daily basis, 24/7.
Well, it's very funny that you brought up Enron, because Enron was one of those moments that almost cracked the system. I was going to Bible class and struggling with some people who were very bought into the established reality, and Enron almost cracked their belief. And a couple things pulled out the stops, one of which was it was after 9/11. There's a couple things that pulled out the stops, one of which was the war, going to war, which is one of the things that is often used to hold the system together. Well, go on to your second.
The second big lie is 9/11, and it's associated lies about Islamo-fascist terrorism, the rationale for the global war on terror, Saddam Hussein, weapons of mass destruction, and on and on and on. But a lot of folks aren't aware that 9/11, in addition to all of that, in addition to kickstarting the wars, the resource wars, it was also a cover for a major heist and subvert major investigations of massive fraud. And folks really don't understand that, and they don't see the connection, but the connection is there. Yes, certain people had priorities and they had an agenda that they wanted to follow, but when you start to make the connections, you're seeing some names come up. You watch the TV shows, and they show you how they investigate somebody, and they have the pictures, and then they have the lines that, well, this person is a person of interest and he's connected or she's connected. And, well, that's what you see once you start delving into this. And so it's not an isolated incident. It becomes part and parcel of a whole plan and agenda to roll certain things out, and they're aided and abetted by the things that you talked about, the artificial reality. And it's that people don't even think that this is not true, that this is not happening.
It's interesting. I think one of the most dangerous things that can happen is you have a cycle of disrespect between the general population and the establishment. And what one of the things that most contributes to the establishment's disrespect for the general population is when they can pull off a big lie. So if you can kill with impunity and people will still treat you like you are important and admirable and powerful and successful, you're a quote-unquote winner, as the president would say, and you can get people to respect you even though you've just engineered something that kills them or kills some of them. So we saw, if you look at the group that was responsible for killing Kennedy, the fact that they got away with it so emboldened them and caused tremendous disrespect on their part of the general population. And we've certainly seen that with 9/11. So, the fact that you can basically kill thousands of Americans in broad daylight, engineer the world's greatest insurance fraud, destroy, all the documentation on and stop all enforcement on trillions of dollars of sort of financial fraud associated with the financial coup d'etat. I mean, basically, the power to kill with impunity is what backs up the ability to create this fake reality. And 9/11, I think there's no better example of that from the time of the Kennedy assassination on than 9/11.
Well, let's go back and take it back to Bernays and Lippmann, because that's the attitude they had.
Right.
They felt that the masses needed to be manipulated.
Right.
They didn't feel that we as a group collectively had the mental wherewithal to make the best decisions possible. And, to show you how brazen they were, they couched those kinds of thoughts in terms of the democratic process, which was the exact opposite.
Right. So the folks who said we need another Pearl Harbor engineer. There's one commentator the other day that says World War III has already started. It started with 9/11 and it's going to last till 2027. And I think, you know, I think the lies of 9/11 are very important, because if you want to stop World War III, you know, part of the way you stop World War III is telling the truth of 9/11.
Yeah, but I would take issue with that. I think World War III commenced immediately after World War II. It's just again the entrainment. We weren't taught to focus on all the interventions, the wars all around the world.
Right.
So we just either are not told about them, or we think they're inconsequential.
Right. And I think Kennedy was not on board for doing that, and that's why he had to go.
Yeah. And he, you know, his father was wealthy, and he had connections, but I don't think the Dulles brothers and the people who and the Bush family who actually plotted and planned Kennedy's demise considered him a peer. I don't think they viewed Joseph Kennedy as
a peer
guy.
If you haven't read David Talbot's book, The Devil's Chessboard, it's the single best book on the Kennedy assassination. But it really shows you the hierarchy in and around Dulles. Dulles is project manager, but it running up into the Rockefellers and the Rockefeller Foundation is quite well done. And you really see the American establishment at that time and at work. Okay, well, let me go to the next one, because this is my second big system, and that is fiat currency. And so I talked about fake information. Now I want to talk about fake money, because the other key to creating a parallel universe that's fake is being able to create fake prices. And if you have fiat currency and you combine it with the federal credit mechanism, you can basically create a mechanism, and they've been able to do it, that will allow you to manipulate markets and in doing so keep the real governance system hidden. Because, you know, we still don't yet see who's in control and how the decision-making process works. So the governance system is hidden. It's very much hidden behind these financial mechanisms. Part of the big lie in all of this is that we have a retirement savings system. It's beginning to look increasingly, given the financial coup d'etat, the $11.5 trillion missing from the federal government, $27 trillion in bailouts, it's beginning to look like, you know, we're putting the money into the retirement system to save, but you know, it's disappearing out the back door with the bailouts, with the missing money from the federal government, with manipulation of the interest rates. And so, you know, I'm beginning to wonder, is it a retirement savings system, or is it a financial fraud? But the reality is you can't create this fake map of the world without being able to fake the price and the pricing mechanism. And it's what Goebbels said, government has to, you know, keep people from the political, economic, or military consequences of the lie. When the baby boomers finally realize what's happened, I'm wondering what the plan is next. But I would say the second thing, starting with fiat currency, is fake money has been critical. I mean, fake money is a really big lie, and it's what's made this fake map of the world go. So including the fake pricing system. So I would say second really big lie is the fake money.
I just wanted to dovetail on what you just said, because oftentimes what the plutocrats do is they don't just do something on a large scale. They'll try it small scale. I call it float a trial balloon, or they'll
right.
do something on a much smaller scale. So the things that you're talking about, they're just going to brazenly just take the 401ks and the retirement and the pensions, a couple of years ago in Cyprus, they went in and took the people's money in that country. And they called it a bail-in as opposed to a bail-out. They took the money, saying they were going to use it to prop up the government and the financial system. And so they didn't even try to hide what they're doing. And I maintain that it won't be too long before we'll see some of that, even though the financial system, pension-wise, is in trouble because they're all underfunded, and a lot of them got caught up in the Bernie Madoff and Enron and those type of scams. So once they steal that, there'll be nothing left.
Well, they've been able to carry a lot of it through debasement, and the question is how much more will they be able to carry through debasement? But a lot of it, it depends on how they do it, Junius, but certainly on the pension funds, it's going to look like controlled demolitions of individual systems. A lot of people are not going to see the systemic nature of it. And that's because they've really been able to keep things from getting integrated. You know, so I think Enron, for example, was used to launder the money that was being pulled out of the U.S. government, but trying to get people to integrate that picture is really difficult. So it's the same with the pension funds. The housing bubble siphoned money, you know, through the mortgage market out from all the pension funds across the board. But if you talk to people, beneficiaries in California who just got cut by CalPERS, you know, had their pension benefits cut, they say, well, your municipality hasn't been paying the checks. And they don't connect it to all the different systemic things that have gone on to bankrupt the municipality or lower the returns on the pension fund. Mm-hmm. So it's very elegantly designed to make it hard for people to really connect the dots.
Well, because one of the things, because they have us distracted with so many because they know us now, they can design entrainment specifically for a certain demographic that'll force us to look off.
Right.
You know, his magician is showing us his right hand, he's doing something with his left hand, you know, picking our pockets. You know.
Okay, next one, your turn.
Well, it's consistent with what you said. If the Wall Street Bank and auto manufacturers bailout saved the banking system and the economy, and that the money's been paid back and the taxpayers are whole, and you just the trillions of dollars that have been siphoned off, very few people know about the loans from the Fed that kept the banks solvent, or they used to boost their upper level management salaries and parachute packages, and the fact that there are literally billions of dollars that have not been collected and won't be collected, just off the TARP stuff. And what you're talking about is trillions of dollars that had nothing to do with TARP.
If I had a year with nothing else to do, if the world stopped, I would spend the year proving, you know, figuring out and calculating and then proving how much got stolen through the bailouts. This idea that the government got paid back is all a bunch of hooey. But it would take me a year. It'd be 2,000-3,000 hours to figure it all out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we're starting to see that all this stuff fits into the machinery of the big lie. And it's not the lie, it's what's going on that the lie is covering up. And that's what we're talking about.
Right. Right. We're being harvested. This is a harvesting machine, the whole thing. And we're financially being harvested. And well, my next one is the black budget and the parallel universe. And you know, you've got one U.S. federal budget, but it's financing two civilizations, and everybody's pretending that the second civilization doesn't exist, and all the assets created in the second civilization aren't on the balance sheet that's financing it. You know, right. So all that technology gets created and it's someplace else. And so, you know, I've been on recent radio shows, I've been likening it to the man who has two families in two different towns and manages to finance them from one job for 20 or 30 years and then finally can't take it anymore. And, suddenly the families discover that they both exist and no one can fathom how he pulled it off. But we're a little bit, you know, we've literally got one paycheck and two families, one of whom is secret. And all those assets are disappearing onto that separate balance sheet, you know, but the debt is staying on the first balance sheet. And of course, it's becoming completely unbearable. So I would say the black budget in the parallel universe is my fourth.
Well, as we're talking about the economy and lies that were told, next lie from is the poor people were responsible for the subprime mortgage and the housing.
You wonder how they get away with that one.
Well, but it's all part of the big lie. They throw out
right
prime loans. But they don't talk
right
about the systemic machinations behind them, the securitization, the fraud, the rating agencies that gave bogus evaluations, and on and on and on. And, you know, poor people don't have any control over who gets the loan, the approval. They blamed it on the government saying that you had to extend loans to people that are demographic that you hadn't extended loans to prior.
Right.
They didn't say be stupid.
Right.
You know, again, it was all part of a way to make money and boost. And a lot of that boosted the shadow financial system. It's just that the ones that were operating and doing the real casino stuff, they put the system at risk, and it's still at risk, even with all the so-called bailouts and all the Fed money. And
right.
All, most banks aren't sovereign.
Well, here's the reality. Poor people get blamed for a lot. And it's really funny. We spend $1 trillion a year on military globally. But poor people are bankrupting the U.S. government, or, you know, poor people are bringing drugs into the U.S. government. There's nothing the military intelligence can do to stop them. And,
right.
And poor people, we had $27 trillion of bailouts when $8 billion would have paid off all the mortgages in the country on single-family homes. And it's all poor people's fault because they were irresponsible.
Right. And
right.
And that would... thing is that the government, through asset forfeiture, is targeting poor people again, because they don't for the most part, they don't seize all the assets of the white collar guys because they have offshore accounts that they can't get to.
Well, but the other thing is it's easier to steal from somebody who has no political clout.
Right.
So if you steal from a rich guy, he's going to go to a senator and start screaming, and you're going to have a problem. But if you steal from somebody who has no political clout, but if you look at how they set up the asset forfeiture laws and both the private prisons, it was clear, you know, that whatever was going to go down from the 90s on was something where you wanted to have a lot of force you could bring to bear. You could see they were clearly worried about pushback.
Right, right.
Right.
But that's a part of, you know, you also, I remember early on when we were talking years ago and you talked about how they were going to, they had already agreed to re-engineer the economy. And so they knew that, and so they had to take precautions because you have a gajillion people out there who are unemployed. So
right.
who who are they going to direct their ire towards?
Right.
And they, for the most part, they have us fighting at each other's necks, but they also know, you know, and I maintain, they remember the French Revolution. They remember what happened
right.
to their ancestors.
Right.
So they're not, that's never going to happen again. You're not putting me on the guillotine.
Okay, well, my fifth one was Global Spring. So we literally have a spring program that is spraying heavy metals and all sorts of stuff. And it seems to be happening in most, if not all, parts of the world. It's certainly happening in Europe and North America. It's certainly happening within the NATO countries. It's happening down in it's happening in the Five Eye countries. So it's happening down in Australia. And this has been one of the most frustrating for me, Junius, because you have so many people who cannot fathom it's really going on, even though the planes are going back and forth and back and forth, spraying right over their heads. I first came to believe that it was happening because I was driving all over the country and I was just watching. You know, I'd be driving through the middle of Kansas. There's nothing there. It's empty. And these planes flying back and forth in these crisscross patterns spraying. So, you know, I was presented with way too much physical evidence as a witness to not see it. You had to see it. There's no way it was just planes flying somewhere. In fact, Alana Friedland calls it the space fence. And one of my concerns, I had a guy used to work in the CIA when I first started to realize that the spring was really happening, and it was a major global program. He tried to convince me that the particles, the nanoparticles in the spring, were coagulating in our body and creating the equivalent of organic chips. And that's what these big things for the airport security were, was to calibrate and measure and test and make sure that that system worked. Mm-hmm. You know, so we were all having, you know, organic chipping. Now, if I tried to tell most people that was true, they would not be able to fathom it. But I absolutely believe that the intention is to chip. And, you know, whether that's the mechanism, I'm not sure. But the global spraying is really happening, and it's having a dramatic impact on the toxicity of the general population and the, you know, and environmental pollution. And, of course, the question is, what is it all about? We've got a great Salieri report with Clifford Carnicom where he goes through all the different hypotheses. And one, of course, is weather control, which I believe is happening.
Right.
So to me, global, and what I can't fathom is that a lot of people refuse to believe it's true or see it, or because it's right there. You can't miss it.
Yeah, but that's part. I heard Dick Gregory talk about that. And one of the things that I forgot, I don't know if it was one of the elements, manganese or one of the metals, it dulls your brain.
Right.
So
right.
This is totally consistent with their MO. And
right.
Interestingly enough, my next big lie is, you know, GMO foods are safe and they're good for you. So and the fact of the matter is they're using the same PR and advertising that Bernays and his acolytes use about cigarettes.
Right. Fake science.
Yep. Yeah.
Fake science.
Again, you.
And that was your sixth. That was your sixth. That was one of your runner-ups, right?
Yeah. And
yeah.
The last one was the Putin, Russia, the Ruskies ruse. So.
You've had a couple of really good blog posts on those, the Russian ruse.
Yeah, because I think it's being used to gin up a conflict somewhere. I don't know whether it's going to be in Syria or it's going to be in Ukraine or it's going to be somewhere in the Mediterranean along one of the neighboring countries that border Russia. But, you know, their options are open. I mean, they have seen,
right.
they seem to be going hog wild on this. So.
One of the things I think the Russian ruse is very informative in terms of explaining some of the Bernays techniques. About 6 weeks ago, Greg Hunter said to me on USA Watchdog, he said, you know, Clapper has admitted there's no evidence of Russian interfering in the election. They haven't been able to produce one shred of any evidence. Everything is just speculation or general concepts or, you know, sort of general allegations. There's nobody's come forward and say, you know, this day, this event, this specific, here's the document, you know, there's nothing. And he said, so now that Clapper's admitted there's nothing, it's all going to go away. I said, no, Greg, it won't go away. The volume will just go up, but it's right. Not going to go away. They're not going to give up on this. And what you see with the Russian ruse is you see an incredible amount of noise and accusations and writing with no evidence. And the more people point out there's no, you know, well, where's your evidence or where's the specifics, the noise just gets louder and spreads in more places. And it's an example of the big lie. When it can't be documented, you just make the lie bigger and louder.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, we could create a program or post something on YouTube that shows Clapper saying it, and even shows Comey, because I think he made some early statements that there was no concrete evidence of it as yet. Put that on, and people would still, because of the impact of the propaganda blitz, they wouldn't believe it. You know, here you have the head of the Defense Intelligence, you have the secret police, FBI, saying it, but CNBC and MSNBC and NPR and everybody else is saying the exact opposite. So it's almost like, okay, who are you going to believe?
One of the things that struck me was, you know, Trump's approval ratings were falling pretty low. I think it was 43%. And then he started dropping bombs, and they say it's now up to 50%. But one of the things I noticed was the general population was getting angry at him because the shriek-o-meter was so high. And what they didn't realize, every time I've talked to a person about that, I was saying, well, you know, by you being bothered by the shriek-o-meter goes up when the cash flows to the unproductive stop. So Trump is doing things that cause the cash flows to the unproductive to fall. So they start shrieking. And the population gets irritated, which means Trump has to let the cash flows flow back into the unproductive. So if you want change, then you're going to have to be able to live through ignoring the shriek-o-meter. And that's something the population has never learned how to do. Right. And shows no inclination to do whatsoever. Well, let me give you my two runners-up. One was the suppression of health care cures and freedoms, and the two I most had in mind were suppression of very economic or natural cancer cures, and the other was the whole vaccine issue. And this one really baffles me, Junius, because you're talking about getting parents to do things which are, you know, destroys the health of their children. You know, it's so counterintuitive to human nature. You just can't believe you can brainwash somebody to the point where they would intentionally harm their children and not be willing to listen to the unbelievable body of evidence that what they're about to do is harmful.
Yeah, but remember, the state has a fallback position when the propaganda doesn't work. They have coercion and violence. So right. If you refuse to vaccinate your child, you can be dragged into court, and we can take your child from you by putting you in prison.
Right. Right. It's gotten pretty scary. The other is the divide and conquer, and that's a favorite topic of mine. And you've helped me. We did one on divide and conquer, but basically, you've got a machinery that's spending $1 trillion a year on war. You know, the beauty of the war on terrorism that occurred after 9/11 was you didn't have an enemy, so the war could go on forever. You didn't have to end it just because you eradicated the enemy. And that's what they needed. They needed an enemy who could just, you know, who was invisible, who you could keep going. So it was the ultimate inefficient enemies. But apparently it's not working because we're back to the Russians. But you can't keep that machinery of $1 trillion a year for military and, you know, if you add up intelligence budgets and PR and everything else, you're talking about, I don't know, $1.5 trillion a year in just control and central control, and you can't keep that going without divide and conquer. And as you know, I think the biggest divide and conquer is men versus women, but, you know, now we have Christians and Islam, and, you know, it just goes on and on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you'll look, you'll see that we were brainwashed and what you call it, and trained with that with Trump. And the way they focus on the differences, the fights at his rallies, and that is going to ratchet, because one of the reasons they had to go to the Ruskies is because people are starting to wake up and say, hey, wait a minute. How do we justify all this money on these ragtag guys that can't do anything, they can barely feed themselves or whatever? How do you justify all that money? And so now you have to have a state that is the enemy. And it didn't help that he thwarted their plan, you know, around the world, particularly in the Middle East. So they're really annoyed with him now.
Well, my biggest concern, I don't know if you saw the videos of the Chuck E. Cheese brawls last year.
No, I don't think so.
Have you seen the movie The Kingsman?
I've seen pieces of it, but I haven't seen the whole thing.
Okay, well, it's not my favorite movie. But Samuel Jackson plays this Silicon Valley billionaire who hands out free SIM cards and then can manipulate people through the entrainment, through the phones. But he can literally there's one scene where 200 people in a Southern Pentecostal church jump up in the middle of the service and kill each other. It's a brutal thing. But last year, we saw all sorts of incidents where literally 20 or 30 adults would start fighting each other in a brawl in Chuck E. Cheese. And it looked just like a prototype of the Kingsman technology. So, you know, I've been telling subscribers and clients, please, if you're anywhere where that starts or a fight breaks out in a mall, you know, turn off your smartphone, you know, get out of there, because what's happening may not be wholly natural. So if you look at these latest riots out at Berkeley, first of all, it looks like some of the people are really there to agitate and start fighting. So it could just be the same old that we saw in the riots throughout the, you know, in the 60s or the 90s. But I'm really wondering if this technology is now going to be used to weaponize the population. So, I'm really concerned. It's taking that control manipulation up another level, because it's really a way of getting people to feel like they need government. I mean, the war on terrorism was a way of getting people to feel like they needed government, and that's what false flags did. Oh, you know, we better pay our taxes because we still need government. But, you know, this kinds of lawlessness is, if anything, it's another government marketing problem. But it's one that concerns me, particularly because the technology is not just in the hands of the government, since they hand in the third parties. You know, force is no longer the monopoly of sovereign governments. We're watching private armies, private intelligence agencies. I just saw an article in the Wall Street Journal. There's a church in Alabama that's having so many security problems, it's getting permission from the state to have its own police force, which will have the authority to arrest and use deadly force.
I'm not surprised, but I think another way of looking at what you're talking about is not just the fights breaking out, but people doing harm to themselves. because if you look at the pathology in the communities, the numbers are white men are dying. The mortality rate for white men is dropping rapidly, and so we need to look at say in Greece, because of all the austerity and the people, the government took people's pensions, white people's means of sustenance away, suicides were on the rise. And then we talked about several years ago when I was on your program, I talked about the opiate epidemic that very few people were talking about. Now it's a major issue. Now people are talking about it. And so I think all that goes to what you're talking about, not only the so-called chemtrails, but the electromagnetic and the signal issues that interfere with our natural resonance, because we have our own resonance, and then we're designed to resonate in harmony with the Earth's resonance, but these our computers, our cell phones, our smart TVs and all that, they're throwing our balance off.
Right.
So when you look at the totality of all of this, it's not just lashing out at other people. It's what we're doing to our personal selves.
Right.
Also.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I, because someone will say to me, doesn't understanding the lies depress you? And I say, no, it doesn't depress me, because if I understand what the lies are, then I can use my time in accordance with my purpose and where I want to go instead of getting harvested by the lies. So I find understanding the lies to be unbelievably helpful in terms of just navigating the environment. But it does mean you have to go through sort of a grief period where, you know, I used to think I was part of an advanced civilization. And now I think I'm part of a very primitive civilization, which is not cheerful. But at the same time, you know, I can go about within my sphere of influence trying to create advanced civilization and enjoy that creation. So let me just ask you, are you glad you know what the lies are, and how do you sort of navigate the grief that comes with seeing how big the lies are?
Well, I'm able to do it because I believe everyone is here for a purpose, a divine mission. And I just happen to believe that mine is to tell the truth and to help other people see not so much external forces that are arrayed against us, but also to recognize our own divinity and to come to grips with that, and then figure out how to manifest and actualize that. And that's a struggle in and of itself. And so it's enabled me to get, I wasn't depressed. I was kind of fearful. It's like, oh man, what happens to people when they stand up against the system, the machine?
Right.
And then it just came to me, don't worry about it. I'll take care of you.
Right.
So I don't. People come to me all the time and say, aren't you afraid of the stuff that you're writing? Aren't you? And I said, well, first of all, it's not that widely circulated, and I'm like some guy, a friend of mine, we used to say we were the guys that were coming by the walls of the city throwing bricks that had notes wrapped around them. You know, people, what's going on? But that's what keeps me going. And probably if I didn't do this, I would probably get sick and really get depressed and just transit out of here. But I've learned to listen to my inner higher self.
Right. Well, that's the trick, as to how do you find your inner self and just take your pathway, because that's the pathway where you're safe. But I started this interview by saying you always come at a place that's deeply human, but you keep your cool. And I think a lot of people who start off being astute, they lose their cool, and then they get off kilter. And I think you always keep your cool. And by keeping your cool, you don't attract the, you know, sort of the demonic forces.
Yeah, that's important because, you know, we saw what happened to Mike Rupert. We saw what happened to Gary right. Webb. We saw what happened to Tom Flacco. We saw what happened to a lot of people who just became depressed about right. what was going on because they felt they weren't being effective waking people up. You know, the thing, our job is to put it out there and to believe in ourselves, and the universe is going to take care of the rest.
Right.
Know? So,
right. It's not our job. The universe is not our job. Our job is to do our piece.
No, to tell the universe what to do. No, I don't think that. No, that's not our skill set. That's a little bit above our pay.
Yeah, you're not good at the big lies, Junius. Okay, well, tell us again how we access From the Ramparts is your website, and that's where we can read your regular blogging. Tell us how we access the radio shows.
You can go to www.haramberadio.com. The radio program is called The Digital Underground. I do a blog on SoundCloud. You can go to SoundCloud and just type me in, Junius Ricardo Stanton. It's called Akoben. Akoben is the Akan word for the war horn. It's a ram's horn that's used to call the village for assembly, preparation, alertness, and in extreme cases, war. So I'm on SoundCloud and Podomatic. I just got onto Podomatic, and it's Akoben, A-K-O-B-E-N. It's kind of an eclectic group of interviews and commentaries. So that's how they can find me, or just type my name in their browser, and surprisingly a lot of stuff comes up.
Yeah, a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff over many years. Well, Junius, thank you for joining us on the Salira Report, and we'll be in touch.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right. Bye. Bye.